Welcome back, friends. It is episode number 28 of Raw Health Radio, and I'm sitting down with Dr. Robert Brody to talk about the blood type diet. Now, you've probably all heard me saying a lot that there is no such thing as a one-size-fits-all nutrition plan. We're going to put that little myth to bed right now. So a little bio on Dr. Brody. He is a licensed naturopathic physician. He's a teacher at University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine, and he works at the Center of Excellence in Generative Medicine, and he's here to share his wisdom with us on the blood type diet. Dr. Brody, how are you going today?
I'm doing pretty good. And yourself, David?
I'm very good. I'm really excited to hear what you've got to share, because you guys, you've got a little bit of a different perspective on what I've been taught around this area, but I'm sure we've got a lot of common overlap. And I can't wait to hear what you've got to bring to the table.
I'm good. I'm ready to get started.
Let's do it. So, Dr. Brody, what's your health story, and why do you do what it is that you do?
So, you know, my health story is a little bit of a different one. I used to be a professional whitewater kayak instructor working in the southern part of the United States. After the season was over, I took a job up in the northern part of the United States as a teacher assistant working in special education classrooms, helping children with science and history classes and, you know, kind of dealing with their learning disabilities. And that really got me interested in natural health, because I've seen all these children, all these pharmaceutical drugs, and they're not getting any benefit from them. I thought, there's got to be a different way. So I did some research. I found about this weird medical specialty called naturopathic medicine. And I told one of my students' parents about this doctor who sees kids up there. And needless to say, that child went to that doctor, and after changing diet, the student was pick out dairy out of the student's diet, and he got out of all special education classes within 3 months, and he was in complete mainstream classes. And I'm like, there's something into this. There's some kind of details that I need to know here. So I then, after the student semester was over, I went back to school pre-med for an undergraduate degree, and then I went into naturopathic medical school afterwards. You know, my father is actually a well-known homeopath and nutritionist working in the United States as well. I never thought I would go into medicine per se. And it just so happened, the circumstances that happened.
3 months off dairy and this child was out of special ed classes.
Yeah, it was one of those kind of amazing stories that you always hear about, but you don't necessarily believe. It's profound.
Yeah, that's crazy. So what exactly is the blood type diet that you work on with your patients then?
So the blood type diet was a diet originally developed by Dr. Peter Diadamo. His father actually started off with the main research, you know, talking about stress and noticing that certain people do better with certain type of exercises to help control their stress. And Dr. Peter Diadamo took that research that his father was originally investigating and came up with the blood type diet, I believe, in 1996. He wrote a book after doing a whole bunch of research, and it comes down to pretty much about four different diets based on your blood type. So that ABO blood type. So we have a blood type diet for blood type A's, one for O's, one for ABs, and one for B's. And breaking it down a little bit further, you know, the blood type O, the diet for the blood type O is really one that's based a little bit more off the hunter-gatherer days. So back way when, we'd have the humans running around trying to kill the woolly mammoths and stuff like that. So they were a little bit more meat-based on their diets, and they were also taking a lot of the fruits and vegetables from their immediate surrounding and eating those things. So generally, the blood type O diet is a little bit more less carbs, and it's more meat and vegetables-based diet. Where the blood type A diet, the closest resemblance I can give is more along the lines of a Mediterranean diet, or a little bit more along the lines of a vegetarian diet, where you're eating a lot more vegetarian foods and less of the meats. So generally speaking, you know, blood type A would do really well in like fish, maybe a little bit of turkey, and a lot of vegetables, you know, soy, etc., etc.
Gotcha. Is there anything else other than blood type that kind of brings these groups of people who should eat this way together? Like, is certain blood types more likely to come from one particular part of the world or from another part, or what's the story there?
You know, the blood type O is actually the most ancient blood type. You know, blood type O or blood type zero, if you're from Europe, is you don't have a blood type antigen in your cells. So it's the oldest known blood type. And then the next one would probably be blood type A, which is kind of our transition from the farming period into urban society was kind of when that change, I guess, is best correlated with. And blood type Bs are definitely a little more geared toward kind of Southeast Asia and kind of India and kind of that region. And blood type AB is actually the newest blood type out there. It's kind of a merging of blood type A and blood type B, getting this blood type AB. But most people don't realize there's actually about 295 different types of blood type out there. And ABO and the positive negative factor, or the rhesus factor, is the ones that the medical society thinks is the most important.
Right. So if you had someone, let's say, who was a blood type where they were more likely to be a hunter-gatherer, mm-hmm. that person generally wouldn't do so well if they swapped over to a vegetarian diet, as someone who would be more like what you just said would be a Mediterranean diet. Is that correct?
That is correct. You know, there's a whole bunch of public studies out there, and you can kind of read all the testimonials. One of the big ones was his name was Steven Shapiro, and he was a devoted vegan, a raw food vegan. You know, he was a trivia contest winner. He ran the society, I believe, in Houston, Texas. And he developed this chronic disease called pemphigus vulgaris. And he tried literally everything to get rid of this. He did a raw food diet. He did a candida diet. He did anything you can think of, vitamins, minerals, etc. Then he finally picked up Dr. Peter Diodamo's book, the Eat Right for Your Type book, back in, I think it was 98. And he noticed that if he started eating more meat as a vegan, the disease would go away. And he would go in periods where he would like eat some meat and it would go away. Then he would go back to the vegetarian diet and it would come back. So bothering this kind of, you know, this condition that he was going on, he finally decided, well, I'm not going to die for my cause. I'm actually going to eat meat, make sure it's, you know, humane and not no antibiotics, et cetera, but eat the meat to help him heal himself. You know, he wasn't about to die for his cause. And, you know, it's one of the more published studies out there.
Hey, that's pretty rare for a vegetarian to just renounce it like that, hey?
Mm-hmm. Literally, it was one of those things where it was life and death. He was taking steroids. It was going really bad, and he needed to change it. And we have a lot of people who, you know, vegetarians their whole life, and that's a great thing. You know, if you want to do that, that's fine. But it always comes back to the straw that broke the camel's, you know, back. It's like, well, if it's not working for you and you try it and it's not working for you, it's not working for you, you need to kind of drop the ego at that point and realize I got to take control of my health because I need it for myself, but I also need it for my family members. And that was something that he needed to figure out.
Now, how hard is it for people to actually figure out what their blood type is? I mean, is it a process of actually taking blood, or can it be a lot simpler than that?
There's a couple different ways, but I would say the easiest and cheapest is actually taking blood. And, you know, at the company that I work for, you can get little blood kits, or you can go to a blood bank, or you can actually just do a cheek swab and do that kind of genetic testing too. You can find out your blood type and all your different types of blood type. You can do it that way as well.
Got it. So once someone has found out what their blood type is and they go on your website or they read the blood type diet book and they're on the program, do you think that there can ever be wiggle room around, you know, this is the way that I should eat based on my blood type, but if they go through seasons of, you know, doing more exercise or doing less exercise, do you think that things can kind of move around a bit?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Things definitely move around. And I should have mentioned too, that the blood type diet, you know, we've gone a lot further from that now. Now we look at the genetic information, epigenetic information, and phenotypical expression, and a whole bunch of different blood types to try to make a very individualized diet approach. But I always tell all my patients, and Dr. Diodamo says the same thing, is that we need about 80% compliance with the diet. So that way you can go out on the weekend and you can enjoy your food. You can enjoy going to a restaurant and relaxing. And then just realizing that when you get back into, you know, normal swing of things, a normal week, that you want to eat a little bit more healthier. You know, it's there's certain foods out there that, like, if you're blood type B, for example, and you're eating chicken and you have a chronic condition, that's one of the worst things you can do is eat that chicken. So if you avoid that chicken, you won't have the problem with the disease anymore, whatever it's ringing in the ears or headaches or migraines or et cetera.
Now, when you talk about epigenetics, that's something that I'm not hugely familiar with, but I would think that you would be. The way that I understand it is that genetics basically says you have to play the hand that you're dealt. Like, this is your genes. This is the, you know, if people think it could be heart disease, you're going to get heart disease when you turn 55 because it's just in your family or whatever. But epigenetics says, no, you don't have to play the card that you're dealt. It might say you're more at risk of heart disease. And if you go and act in a way that can bring on heart disease, then it's going to happen to you, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. Is that the right way of thinking about it?
It's definitely a great way of thinking about it. And we learned, you know, in our primary schooling that, you know, in genetics, it's A to T, C to G. So those genes that making up the backbone there, you cannot change your DNA. You cannot change your DNA. But you can control what turns your DNA on or off in certain instances. And that's really where epigenetics works. It turns on a gene or turns off a gene. So you're modulating kind of that backbone with methylation or any of these other things that can turn the genes on and off. And going kind of into the realm of like predispositions toward diseases and stuff like that, you know, just knowing your blood type, your simple ABO blood type, can predict what diseases that you are more likely to get if you're on an unhealthy path. For example, if you're a blood type A, you're more likely to get, you know, or you got to watch out more for the cardiovascular diseases or maybe cancer. So you want to make sure that you're eating to prevent those things so you don't ever have to get that. Where someone who's a blood type O, you're a little bit more worried about autoimmune conditions like thyroid problems and GI problems along those lines.
So if someone is in or should be eating that hunter-gatherer diet that you were talking about earlier, and they're going away from that and maybe eating too many carbohydrates or too many starches or whatever, are they more likely to be at risk of something like diabetes, whereas the person who should be eating that more Mediterranean diet that would be more carbohydrate-rich, like you were saying, if they were to go and eat paleo or too much fat or something like that, they might end up with fatty liver disease or something similar to that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, for the most part, if you're going off the diet, you're putting your body, you're making your body work harder to do the jobs that it needs to do. You're diverting all the energy. And so now you're eating something that your body is not necessarily agreeing with. And your body's going to start attacking like it's foreign. You know, you can go down the line and be like, oh, that's going to start causing inflammation. And I kind of go down that path there. So it's definitely better to eat things that your immune system's not going to react to.
Gotcha. Now, if someone deviates from the right way of eating for them, regardless of whether it's too much fat and protein or too much carbohydrates or whatever, is it going to feel the same for everyone, or will one particular blood type have or be more likely to get a certain kind of reaction compared to another type of blood type?
You know, generally speaking, when someone goes off the diet, it's going to be a unique symptom to them, because whatever their presenting symptoms are when they come into the office and they're saying, I have headaches, migraines, or diabetes, or whatever, the symptoms can come back, but it's going to be individualized toward them. I mean, there's like, what, 6 billion people on the earth right now, and everyone's completely different. And it's just understanding that, you know, when I get a cold, it goes directly to my throat. When my sister gets a cold, it goes directly to her lungs. When my mom gets a cold, it goes directly into a headache. So the way that we're all got the same virus, we all get the same cold, but we're expressing it differently. So the same way when you're going off your diet, you're going to express the symptoms in a different way.
Now, over at the Center of Excellence, you guys also talk about the other ways that blood type can influence our lives other than just what kinds of foods we should eat. And one of those things is stress, which I found to be amazing. Can you talk about that and how different stresses can affect different blood types in different ways?
Oh, I would love to, David. That's actually one of those more interesting topics I find. And I'll talk just about the four different kind of blood types and kind of how they respond to the world. And what something is that, you know, your listeners can do to, if they are blood type O, they can get rid of that stress in a natural way. So generally, blood type O's, we have a problem with with adrenaline, which is the epinephrine and norepinephrine. It's kind of that get up and go, fight the world response where you're motivated and you're in the gym and you're pumping weight. And just like that, the high energy, the best way to get rid of that energy, get rid of that adrenaline, is actually going to the gym and working out, doing more aerobic exercises, more weightlifting exercises, getting out there and moving. Compared to someone who's blood type A, blood type A's have a harder time with a hormone called cortisol, which is a stress hormone. The problem is that this stress hormone gets really high in blood type A's, and it stays high, kind of plateaus at this really high level. And it's very hard to get that down. So generally speaking, I tell every blood type A to make sure they do yoga and Tai Chi in their daily life or in their daily exercise regimen that bring that cortisol level back down. Someone who is blood type B, blood type B's, it's generally more of a balanced diet, but they have a little bit more problems just like the blood type A's in the cortisol sense. So you need to bring that cortisol back down. And blood type B's do really well with meditation, really well with just kind of clearing their thoughts and just kind of zoning out for a little bit to kind of reconnect to the universe to bring that stress level down. where someone who's a blood type AB, they do really well with guided meditation. They have the kind of the same predisposition as a blood type O has with the adrenaline, that get up and fight response. And they do really well with guided meditation. So, you know, I always say, you know, I have my blood type O's who love doing yoga, and I'm like, oh, keep doing yoga, but make sure you're getting some exercise in there. And I have my blood type A's who's like, I love working out, I love going to the gym. I'm like, great, make sure you add some yoga in there too to balance it out. And that was the original research that Dr. D'Adamo's father originally started and noticing.
So how can different stresses affect different blood types as well? Because one of the things that was on your website, which I was reading earlier, is that certain kinds of people will react much, much worse than others to, you know, loud noises or being in crowds or that kind of thing.
That's interesting. Actually, I haven't looked into that much. I mean, I guess it would have to do with the responses of the, you know, kind of hormones I was talking about. Mm. Well, that, you know, that blood type O who's that hunter-gatherer who, when that tiger is chasing them, they need to get up and go. So their adrenaline gets way up. So if there's around a lot of noise and that kind of stuff, the best way they can do is burn that energy off is to run, is to move. Where someone who's a blood type A, they're not necessarily as concerned with that tiger chasing them because they're kind of that farmer, kind of urban life. And they can do better with just that calming stuff, the calming exercises.
Amazing. So let's talk about children then. What can a blood type mean for children? I mean, if you're a parent who is, let's say, blood type A and your partner's blood type B, what's going to happen with the child there?
You know, it's going to be different. And, you know, in the science medical world, there's going to be the pundit square. So you can figure out, you know, is the parent a true blood type A? Is she AA or is she just little A, big A? And is the father little B, big B? So it all depends, kind of like the pedigree of the blood type. So it can be hard to predict. You really do need to do, for the most part, a blood typing test, just because we don't necessarily know if it's a, you know, like a purebred blood type A or not. But generally speaking, when you have couples that come together, who's someone who's blood type A and blood type O, and they're trying to make, you know, they have a child who's blood type O or A, or everyone's different blood type, trying to find a way to make the diet work for everyone can be a little bit of a challenge, but it is possible, you know, that, you know, if someone's a blood type A and the rest of the family is blood type O's, the A needs more vegetarian diet and the blood type O needs a little bit more meat in their diet. So the blood type A would be maybe making more fish or maybe making more turkey. And these foods are usually better for blood type A's and good for blood type O's. So it is possible to kind of merge them together. And, you know, Dr. D'Adamo and his wife, Martha D'Adamo, that's a perfect example. Dr. D'Adamo is a blood type A and his wife is Martha is a blood type O.
Got it. So let's talk about the do's and don'ts of blood typing then, because this is something that you mentioned before on the show that you wanted to go over.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's a great example. I always like giving a little like kind of quick tips. So I'll just start with blood type O because it is one of the little bit more common ones. Generally speaking, you know, the blood type O's, you want to make sure that they're not eating any wheat, you know, not necessarily gluten-free, but definitely the wheat-free is going to be an important part for these people. So blood type O's, the best thing that you can do if you're a blood type O is avoid wheat. That is going to be one of the worst things. If you're trying to lose weight, you definitely want to avoid wheat. And it's not necessarily the gluten aspect of the wheat, it's the wheat itself. The wheat has a reaction with the blood type, which causes your immune system to get revved up, which can cause inflammation. And that's one of the predispositions for blood type O's. So the avoids for blood type O is definitely going to be wheat, corn, lentils, dairy, and even kidney beans, believe it or not. And, you know, some of the top foods, you know, top weight loss foods, I have a lot of patients coming in for weight loss, and they always like hearing this stuff. If you want to lose weight as a blood type O, definitely you need to get that exercise in, like we were mentioned earlier. But make sure you're eating grass-fed beef. Make sure you're eating lamb. Make sure you're eating maybe some cod, which is a type of fish. Make sure you're eating some kelp. Make some broccoli, green tea, and pineapple are some of the best foods for blood type O's.
Gotcha. What about blood type A?
So blood type A is like that herbivore diet, so more of a plant-based diet with kind of selected animal protein. So that I always make the correlation to the Mediterranean diet. It's a little bit more detailed than that. But generally, as a blood type A, you really want to avoid that red meat, that dairy, and corn. And the reason, you know, the gastroenterologists have known for years and years and years that people with blood type A have lower amount of stomach acid than any other blood type. And that blood type O has more amount of stomach acid than any other blood type. So that's why the blood type O's do better with animal proteins, where someone who's blood type A, who doesn't make a lot of stomach acid, doesn't do as well with those rich animal proteins.
So fattier cuts of meat like chicken thigh or really fatty steaks and whatnot, they just don't have the acid to break down the protein bonds and whatnot, right?
Yep. Generally speaking, that is exactly correct. Blood type A, just top weight loss foods are going to be like tofu, broccoli rabe, salmon, pinto beans, pineapple, and green tea.
So what about blood type B then?
So blood type B is generally a very balanced diet. It's one of those diets where you can eat some meat, you can eat some dairy, you can eat some veggies, you can eat some carbs. So it's a nice little balanced diet there. The big, big, humongous avoid for blood type B or anyone who has that B antigen is going to be chicken. The other two ones are peanuts and lentils.
Why is that chicken specifically?
It's just the way that the body attacks it and has an autoimmune reaction to it. Before I was even interested in any form of medicine, my sister read Dr. D'Adamo's book way back when, and she told one of her friends who had chronic ringing in the ears, like, yeah, I read this book. It said if you're blood type B, don't eat chicken. He's like, yeah, whatever. It's a little hogwash or whatever. And then he finally tried it. And then all of a sudden, his ringing went away. Then he'd eat chicken, and then it would come back. And I was like, there's some kind of correlation there. So it's just your body making an immune reaction to the chicken via a receptor in the cells called a lectin that you're having the problem with it.
Mm.
So some good foods for like a blood type B would be like eggs or turkey or a type of fish called halibut, quinoa, kidney beans are good in this population, kale, papaya, and some licorice.
And that's good for weight loss or good for general health?
They're going to be good generally for weight loss and for general health.
Gotcha.
Because ideally, we have that awesome side effect when people do the blood type diet. They have that really good side effect is they start losing weight. They start losing weight in a healthy amount. Little by little, they start feeling better. They get more energy, a little more pep in their step. And the weight just kind of starts disappearing a little bit, especially if you combine that with the exercising and controlling that stress.
Exercising in the right way, of course, though, for your
specific exercising in the right way, of course, yep.
So last thing that you said that you wanted to go over was things that you probably won't know about blood type dieting.
Yeah, we touched on some of those points today, but it's just generally speaking, you know, that the blood type, you know, blood typing modernly, it was started by a physician named Carl in Austria, who discovered like kind of the ABO blood typing. And he discovered that if you put this blood into someone else, you pretty much the cells explode. And that's kind of the modern medicine's point of view when it comes to blood types and why blood type's important. But we know that there's a little bit more important things about blood type. You know, most people don't know that things without blood can have blood types. Viruses, bacteria, fungus, and yeast, all these things have blood types. So they're going to be more for like candida. Like candida would have a certain blood type. So if you have a high population of candida in your system, most likely you're more likely a blood type O.
So having an overgrowth of those kind of bugs in your system will actually change what kind of blood type you should be eating like.
Yeah, if you eat the proper foods, it'll help balance those things out. So a great example of a virus that has a blood type blood type predisposition is the norovirus. And that's the virus you always hear if someone goes on a cruise ship and everyone gets sick on the cruise ship and they have to like take the cruise ship in and have to like decontaminate the whole thing. It's usually they come out with a breakdown of the norovirus. And there's a certain blood type called a non-secretor that will not get that virus because it cannot stick to the cells.
Interesting. Interesting. So have you got any other little trivia tips or little bits of information there around what we don't know about blood type?
I can keep going with that for sure. Blood type's kind of all over the place. You know, anything that's wet and sticky in your body can have blood type in it. So your saliva, your digestive juices, your semen, your vaginal fluid, your sweat, all these things have blood type in it. And a great example of this, if you've ever seen the movie Silence of the Lambs, which it's a horror movie or whatever, and they're trying to track down this killer or whatever, and they mention in the movie, they're like, oh, he's a secretor. They mention that he's a certain blood type that secretes his blood type into all of his bodily secretions. And this is just an example that your blood type can be found in your bodily secretions and how you interact with the world. And like I mentioned earlier, there's a whole bunch of different blood types out there, about 295 actually. You know, we know the big ones, the ABO and the positive or negative, which is the rhesus factor. But there's also ones called like Duffy and MN and Lewis. And these are all very important. But the most important ones are the ABO, the positive or negative, and something called the secretor test or the Lewis.
So will those different fluids or different parts of the body, can they have different blood types within the one body, or is it they're all going to be type A or type B or type O?
If you're blood type A, you're pretty much going to stay blood type A the rest of your life. And all your bodily secretions, if you do secrete your blood type into those things, they're going to stay blood type A. Now, that can change if you go through like major blood transfusions and stuff like that. You can actually change your blood type, but that's more of a rare situation. But if you're blood type A, you're going to be A the rest of your life.
Got it. What's next on your list of things that we didn't know about blood type?
Blood type controls how things stick to your cells. So, you know, certain blood types are found to be a little more sticky. The cells like to stick together. And this can influence your developing embryo inside a woman's womb when the baby's developing, or how cancer progresses through the body. And one of the reasons why blood type A seem to be a little bit more predisposed to cancers for some reason. They're a little bit more sticky. The stuff likes to stick to them a little bit more. So blood type can actually affect your gut. And we talked a little bit about the amount of stomach acid actually floating around your gut. But it also affects how your gut heals itself, you know, via an enzyme called intestinal alkaline phosphatase, something that blood type O's make very high amounts of. And this does a couple different things. It helps split cholesterol. So generally, if you're a blood type O, you're naturally going to have higher cholesterol than any other blood type in the healthy sense. You're also going to have a little bit higher blood pressure than normally than any other blood type, slightly higher than normal. And you're going to have a higher amount of intestinalized alkaline phosphatase, which actually helps heal up your gut, compared to someone who's blood type A, who has the least amount of those things, have a little bit more problems making sure that gut's nice and healed. So blood types can actually help you with detecting food reactions. So once we were, like before, we were mentioning the blood type Bs and chickens, and how, you know, when a blood type B eats chicken, they get a lot of inflammation, and it causes a lot of problems. That has to do with a receptor on the cells that things like to stick to. It's something called a lectin. And lectins are found all over the place. And about 50% of your diet is actually full of lectins, either good lectins or bad lectins. And when you eat these good lectins, you're going to be able to absorb that food. You're going to be able to help your, you know, inflammation. You're going to be able to help your migraine or whatever is going on. And it's going to be a beneficial thing. But when you eat the bad lectins, it's actually going to cause your cells to agglutinate or to lyse. And this is going to be a bad thing, because now you're taking your red blood cells out of the picture and they can't do the jobs that they need to do. You know, and it's one of those things. I have people come into me all the time that people are trying to lose weight and they just can't do it. They're, you know, maybe they're exercising in the wrong fashion, but also their diet is very important with that. These lectins in your diet can dramatically affect how you lose weight. If you're eating the wrong types of foods, these lectins are going to cause a whole bunch of problems in your gut, and you're going to have a harder time losing that weight. And we talked about it a little bit earlier as well, blood types and prediction individualized diseases and susceptibilities, you know, so certain blood types are more predisposed to cancer or cardiovascular or heart diseases. More blood types are associated with inflammation or depression or diabetes or thyroid. So we can do a step better than most of our allopathic brethren who believe that preventative medicine is early detection. And why I always recommend my patients, you know, they go get the mammogram if they need to, or they go get the prostate exam if they need to, if it's in that time period. But I'd rather prevent diseases than look for them. So I'd rather prevent disease before they even get it. And that's really where the blood type comes in handy. I know if you're a blood type A and you're eating a whole bunch of like meat and you have a lot of inflammation and you're not exercising, that you're more predisposed to heart disease. So I need to work on things now to make sure that you don't have that going on. It kind of creates a perfect storm, and we want to avoid that perfect storm. Yeah. We want to catch you where you're at.
So, Dr. Brody, you've got you and Dr. Diadamo have a personalized nutrition kind of supplement program where you actually identify what particular stress response people are going to have, and then you've got supplements around helping people go through that stress response when it's happening to them. Do you want to talk about that and how that works?
I would love to talk about that a little bit, David. Generally speaking, we have individualized products for your blood type, because we talked a little bit ago about how you deal with stress if you're a blood type A or if you're a blood type O. And we made products to help you kind of deal with that stress while the diet's kind of working, the supplement the diet a little bit. And generally speaking, blood type O's and blood type ABs, they have that more fight or flight response where they got to get up there and go. They have a lot of this energy, a lot of this adrenaline. And we recommend the product called Catechol. And Catechol is full of a whole bunch of good medical herbs and some B vitamins that help you kind of control that stress response. where someone who's an A or a blood type B has a problem with cortisol more so. And the cortisol stays up high and you got to get that level back down. So where yoga would be really good for them and the blood type A or a B diet, also the product called Cortigard would be really good. And this helps brings them down. Once again, it's full of some medical herbs and some B vitamins that help response to that. And you know, you can get these products through a website called RightForYourType. AU.com, and it's right the number four your type AU.com, and you can get these products there. There's also more products on there about probiotics actually that individualize for your blood type, which most people think that one probiotic is good for everyone, which is not necessarily the case. A probiotic is going to depend on your blood type, as we discovered a little bit today, because your digestive system is going to be different for a blood type, and you should have certain bacteria in your gut and certain ones out of your gut.
I hear that because the various different kinds of stress responses that you're talking about, they release different hormones, and those hormones have different building blocks. Is that correct?
Yeah, depending on your blood type, you're gonna have a more predisposition for different hormones causing different problems.
Got it. Love it. So the book is called The Blood Type Diet. Your website, Dr. Brody, is brodynd.com. You're also at generativemedicine.org, and people can find you on facebook.com/BrodyND. Have you got any closing comments that you'd like to leave the listeners with today, Dr. Brody?
Just keep up the good work. Try to take control of your health. It's, you know, when you're riding on an airplane and, you know, you're going through that kind of the motions of the safety procedures going on, you always want to make sure the oxygen mask is on yourself before you can help anyone else. So make sure that you're taking control of your health and you're able to move forward with that.
Love it. Totally support that message, Dr. Brady. I've been saying that for a long time myself. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Oh, thank you. Have a great one.